Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
Ready to stop swiping and find a real relationship? Talkify is America's number one matchmaking service and is 6.5 times more efficient than dating apps. Talkify can match you in as little as 3 introductions compared to dating apps where people spend 40 plus hours swiping 1,500 times for one date. Reclaim those hours spent swiping. With over an 80% success rate, confidential processes with no public profile, you can trust Talkify. Visit TAWKIFY.com to start your journey today.
As Hurricane Milton battered Florida last week, there was one Tampa resident that a whole lot of people were watching ride out the storm.
All right, Dan, the people that are new, explain to them why your sign is to get out a Category 5, one of the worst hurricanes in Tampa history, out on a 20-foot sailboat in Tampa Harbor.
His name is Joseph, sometimes goes by Jay, but he's known online as Lieutenant Dan. Like the character in Forrest Gump, he is an amputee who lives on a boat. And he insisted on staying there.
We know what we're doing, and as long as the water just keeps rising, we'll be fine.
Will you be wearing a life jacket?
Hell no.
After first going viral on the live stream of a guy named Tampa Terrence, Lieutenant Dan showed up on the Weather Channel, local news.
Are you okay? Everybody's worried about you.
Who's worried about you?
It's all over TikTok.
And you know what? Lieutenant Dan, he made it. In the end, he called the storm pretty mellow. The thing is, it wasn't just Lieutenant Dan processing Milton on social media. There was Instagram star Caroline Calloway, who was posting through it from her Sarasota apartment. There was that Florida meteorologist who broke down in tears while watching the storm swirl around the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, these viral moments are how a lot of us process the news these days.
Willa Ramis from over at the Washington Post, he's been wondering what to make of the cacophony of clips.
Everything gets chopped up, diced up into little bits that feed the algorithm and that go viral. And then we're all left to sort of try to make sense of the big picture somehow from that.
Yeah, I noticed that some online betting platforms even took wagers on how many people would survive Hurricane Milton.
Oh my gosh, that is grim. I had not seen that, but I guess it doesn't surprise me.
So I gotta ask, is the internet a good place to get information about fast-moving disasters these days?
The internet has always had its good sides and its bad sides, but it feels different this time.
It feels different, Will says, because the funhouse mirror of social media started working overtime, spitting out rumors alongside the usual live streams and casual chatter. It began as North Carolina dug out from Hurricane Helene a couple weeks back.
A lot of cell service was out, internet was down, roads were washed out, search and rescue efforts were trying to even get into areas that were cut off. That's when misinformation often flourishes, is when there's an information vacuum. Everything gets distorted. These little bits and pieces that may be insignificant or unrepresentative get magnified to epic proportions, and it can be easy to miss the big picture.
Once the information did begin to distort, how present was it in your feed, in anyone's feed?
Yeah, once it started, the misinformation was, it felt like it was everywhere.
Today on the show, what happens when hurricane season collides with a storm of online conspiracies? I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This show is brought to you by Public. If you are looking for simple yet sophisticated investing, Public.com says click on over and check them out. From stocks to options, bonds to crypto, it is all there. You can even earn an industry-leading 5.1% APY on your cash. Public is trusted by millions of investors, and NerdWallet just gave Public 4.6 stars and calls it an impressive experience. Sign up in 2 minutes at public.com. All your investing in one place. This is a paid advertisement for Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of June 17th, 2024, and is subject to change. NerdWallet overall rating 4.6 out of 5 as of May 2024. Full disclosures in the podcast description. This show is brought to you by Discover. Have you heard about Doublenomics? It's okay if you haven't. It's extremely niche and practiced by Discover. Here's an example. Discover automatically doubles the cash back earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back into $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Okay, so here's where we are right now. There's enough misinformation out there that President Biden held a press conference and he called out Donald Trump and other Republicans by name for spreading it. And FEMA, the Federal Disaster Relief Agency, has a whole website set up specifically to debunk disaster-related misinformation. I kind of wonder if you could tell me a little bit more about how this started. Like, what was the first rumor you saw?
One of the first ones that I ran across in large volume was the idea that Kamala Harris had said that the federal government only has $750 to give to the victims of Hurricane Helene.
Where'd you see it?
On X. I spend less time on X than I used to, but X is really the place where the misinformation seemed to metastasize and just, you know, fill up people's feeds. X is where the really sort of political misinformation, and particularly about the government's response to Helene, took root and just dug in.
So where did this $750 thing come from?
Well, like so many bits of what we call misinformation, there's a kernel of truth in it. In this case, a very strong and compelling kernel of truth, which is a video clip of Kamala Harris saying to Helene victims.
And the federal relief and assistance that we have been providing has included FEMA providing $750 for folks who need immediate needs being met, such as food.
But then what happens is, in the post that went viral, that's where it cuts off. And then, you know, you can shape how people process a video like that, how they interpret it with the caption you put on it or with the text of your post.
Yeah, notably, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted this one out with his own little caption. He said, $750 for Americans in desperate need, many of whom lost everything, including family. $250 billion spent in Ukraine. Enough of this madness. So it's a false dichotomy.
Right. Okay. So that's a great example. One of the things that I have been interested in for years as a tech reporter is how the specific design of an online platform shapes the information and the way we interpret it. So this is a great example where when you open a post on X and it's a video post, often you'll see the text of the post before you see the video. You may have it auto-playing, but still, you're going to read the text of the post to figure out whether you're even going to bother to watch the video, right? And so before you've even seen what Kamala says, you've seen Trump saying that this is madness. So then you watch the video and Kamala is saying, you know, for those suffering from Helene, we have $750. You're like, oh my God, she really did say that. That's crazy.
Seems like proof.
Yeah, it seems like proof. And all of a sudden your mind is like made up, you know, particularly if you're inclined already to think that Kamala is bad or that the Democrats are spending way too much on Ukraine or that they don't care about American citizens or especially American citizens in the South who might be Republicans. Now you're angry.
You're triggered.
You're like, this is an outrage. This is horrific. I can't believe you need to share that thing, right? You might put your own incendiary claim on it. And that's how that stuff spreads. And especially when there's no mechanism in place to slow that down or to interfere with that process, it's everywhere in everybody's feeds within hours.
You also noted the way that Trump has falsely claimed that Kamala Harris spent all of her FEMA money on housing illegal immigrants. He's claimed that $1 billion was stolen from FEMA for migrants and has gone missing. Is FEMA somehow giving money to migrants?
Again, there's like a seed of truth here, right? There is, in fact, a pool of money that is allocated through FEMA. It's part of Homeland Security. It's called the Shelter and Services Fund. And it is true that Congress allocated more money in 2024 for shelter and services than it did in 2023. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is that it was done because there have been a lot of border crossings. There's a lot of pressure on the government to help border towns deal with immigration and illegal immigration. And so they were like, let's give some more money so we can help make sure that, you know, that our efforts to control immigration happen in an orderly way. That money was, I believe it went from somewhere in the $300 millions in 2023 to somewhere in the $600 millions in 2024. That's a significant bump. But that is a small fraction of the money that FEMA has for disaster relief. It is also an entirely different pot of money than FEMA has for disaster relief. And it is not FEMA who makes that decision. It's Congress. Congress decided how much to allocate for each of these.
And I don't hear anyone blaming Mike Johnson for this.
Right. So Speaker of the House Mike Johnson is like, you know, sliding down in his chair, like with his head below the desk so nobody sees him or calls on him.
Oh, I wish he was doing that. I'm not sure he is.
Because it was Congress. I mean, it was Congress that made these decisions. And once you look at them in context, and this is like context is critical. Once you look at them in context, you're like, okay, so Congress gave $20 billion for FEMA for disaster relief, and it gave $650 million, you know, gave a tiny fraction of that for shelter and services. And once you understand, they're like, oh, well, that's kind of reasonable. Like, you know, that seems like we're clearly prioritizing disaster relief. But it all gets twisted into this idea that because they increased spending on shelter and services, that means they took away money for disaster relief. But again, yes, it's Congress that's doing it. It's not Mayorkas, it's not FEMA Administrator Criswell, it's not Biden, it's not Kamala Harris.
One of the earliest pieces of misinformation I saw this hurricane season was also one of the weirdest, because it wasn't information. It was just an image. It was this image of a child in a boat hugging a puppy and crying. And it was disseminated on Twitter, other places, clearly AI. Like, people looked at this and they were like, oh, no, clearly this is AI. You can see how this is AI. And part of what made it interesting to me was that it was neutral on its face and yet still being used in a misinformation-y way. And I wondered if that struck you too.
Absolutely. All the fears about AI that you hear about are that it's going to be used for deep fakes. It's going to be used to convincingly make it seem like something happened that never happened, or that someone said something they never said. There have been examples of that, but that's actually still pretty hard to pull off with the current technology. What has actually become a much more common use of AI in political messaging and propaganda is simply to make memes or to illustrate a point. Right? Like, AI lets you illustrate anything you can dream up pretty much instantly. And it's like, not maybe not fully realistic if you're really paying attention. I mean, you said it was clearly AI. Yes, I think to you and me, it's clearly AI. But to somebody who hasn't trained their eye to recognize AI, I think they could easily, I bet more people than not, I would wager, who saw this image.
Oh, yeah, I was squinting at this one. Like, I was like, it's AI?
Right. And again, remember, like, it's so easy to forget that the way everybody consumes social media is like by scrolling, right? Like, we scroll past stuff. Our eyes and brain take it in a second or a fraction of a second or a few seconds. We're not standing, most people aren't squinting at it. But that's actually not the point. Like, it's not about deceiving people. Like, whether or not it actually happened that this particular little girl was on this boat with this sodden poor puppy is irrelevant. It's the fact that that was a handy way to illustrate the suffering. It's a little white girl, by the way. You know, a handy way to illustrate the suffering. And the suffering, of course, is real, even though the image is fake. But you attach that to a post that pins the blame on the Democrats or the migrants or whoever, and it just makes it pop more, right? Like, it makes it more shareable. We've absolutely seen that play out with Helene as well.
When we come back, is what's happening right now an internet problem or an Elon Musk problem?
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states and situations.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some for my mom. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Should we be surprised that the Trump family and campaign is disseminating false information here?
Is that a trick question, Mary? I mean, you know, look, love him or hate him, it is undeniable that Trump has built a lot of his political career on false conspiracy theories and lies. I mean, the thing that helped fuel his ascendance on the American political scene was him relentlessly pushing on Twitter this idea that Barack Obama was not really American, that he was born in Kenya. He latches on to some tidbit, and it's not, you know, it's not just Trump, but there's a whole orbit of sort of MAGA folks and Trump supporters and right wingers that is looking to use this disaster for political ends.
Can we talk about the Elon Musk of it all? Because I do feel like what strikes me as different this time is that there is certainly a group of people supporting Trump and his campaign and promoting misinformation, but there's also a platform supporting him in his misinformation.
Yes. And again, to give context here, I mean, I think misinformation in the wake of a disaster always circulates. Ever since social media became one of the primary ways that people consume the news, it has gotten worse generally. And Twitter has been a place where there has always been misinformation. I remember reading back to Hurricane Sandy. I was in New York and there, you know, the pictures of whatever sharks in the subway, you know, there were all kinds of hoaxes and falsehoods that went around on Twitter. Over the years, Twitter built up a series of efforts and mechanisms to try to mitigate that. They never fully got it under control, not even close, but they did manage to slow it down in some ways.
Do they still have those mechanisms?
No. No. So they when Elon Musk took over Twitter in 2022, his explicit goal was to reduce the content moderation, which he calls censorship. He got rid of a lot of those mechanisms. So for instance, there used to be a team of mostly former journalists at Twitter who curated the trending topic list, and they would add context to the trending topics. They would debunk ones that were false, and they would remove ones that were like truly heinous. Musk instantly got rid of those. Like those were some of the first people to go. It has really been X that's been driving this incredible flood of bizarre falsehoods in the wake of Helene.
Elon Musk is, of course, a noted Trump supporter, showed up at Trump's rally in Butler, Pennsylvania. I'm sort of curious, do you think we'd be seeing this level of disinformation if it was not October of a presidential election year with Trump on the ballot?
No, that's absolutely a factor. And so much of the misinformation that we've seen, it's not actually about the disaster. It's about the response, and it's politically driven. And some people are doing it for ideological reasons, and some people are doing it, I think, honestly, just for clout, because spreading these kinds of rumors and conspiracy theories that pin the blame on somebody, right? Like after a disaster, there's chaos, there's destruction, people are suffering, people are like, why did this happen? You know, it seems like there's no reason for it. If you can give them someone to blame, if you can say, here's whose fault this is, here's why this is so bad, that helps people in a way, right? Like that resolves some of the cognitive dissonance. It gives them a place to channel their frustration and their anger. And then you layer on the fact that we're a month out from an election in incredibly divisive times where one of the candidates, you know, peddles misinformation as a habit. It's kind of a, I hate to use that cliche perfect storm, but insert some better, pretend I don't say that, but it's like, it's quite a confluence of factors that have made this, according to a lot of the disaster experts we've talked to, the worst information environment they've ever seen after a natural disaster.
You know, I was reading something that really stuck with me over the last few days. It was in the climate newsletter Heated, an op-ed from a former Florida government official. The title was Milton is a Monster. Elected leaders are to blame. And this stuck with me because it had the same tone as a lot of the misinformation out there. Like, it was pinning the blame for these big hurricanes on the people in charge. But if you read the essay, it was doing something totally different. Like, it was pointing to the fact that in May, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill removing consideration of climate change from all state laws, and it nullified the state's clean energy goals, banning the construction of offshore wind, for example. It also noted the fact that DeSantis says he's not a global warming person. And I saw this and I was like, this is actually a powerful argument. Like, it goes deeper than a Twitter take that's just like, look at the FEMA money that's not showing up. But I don't see a social media juggernaut amplifying a talking point like this. Do you?
That's the thing, is that social media is built for simple messages and posts that link out to these more sophisticated articles or to third-party websites. They actually are not good for the social media platforms because it takes their users off the site. So Facebook and X and other social media platforms, and TikTok was built this way from the start, they disincentivize linking out to more nuanced takes. And so the oversimplification has been exacerbated, I think, by that. And at the same time, it of course undermines the business models of media outlets that are trying to provide more context and more nuance. I mean, there's something else stuck out to me, Mary, about the way you described that. That headline is incendiary.
It's total clickbait. I clicked.
Yeah. And so even the places that are trying to traffic in really carefully thought out arguments backed up by evidence feel like they have to put clickbait headlines on their stories for anybody to see them these days. And then that further undermines trust in the media, and some of it justifiably so. You know, nobody likes to click on a headline and then find out the story is entirely different from what the headline said. And so even the mainstream media has been degraded by being forced to compete on this social media playing field where the most simplified, sensational message is the one that gets seen. So it's a vicious cycle in our information ecosystem.
You cover the internet. I think a lot of people have come to rely on sources like Twitter, Facebook, whatever, for information in fast-moving situations. Like, I still remember how during the Arab Spring, social media was pivotal to understanding what was going on the ground. We just wouldn't have known certain things without it, right? Is that not true anymore?
No, I think it's still true. I mean, look, people used to call journalism the first rough draft of history, right? Now social media is clearly the first rough draft. It's like really rough. You know, like, that thing needs some serious edits.
It's like the Google Doc of history because anyone can comment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but that is still, social media is still hugely important to the mainstream media as a place to find out what's going on. But what's needed, I think, is that filter, right? Like, you need a workforce of people whose job it is to sift through the good info, the bad info, the sketchy info that's coming in from all directions on social media and figure out, okay, which parts of this are actually true, what of this is BS, what of this is like AI generated slop, you know, what parts are misleading, where's the context missing, and then put together a reasonably credible picture of what's going on from that. But of course, that's not what happens. I mean, understandably, a lot of people want to just go straight to the source. It's more engaging to be on TikTok figuring out what's happening than like reading some long form explainer in an, you know, in an online newspaper.
It's like you're in an escape room. You're trying to figure it out. Yeah. Like, what's the next clue?
Yeah. And I mean, and the thing is, like, it's a little different from an escape room, right? Because in an escape room, the explicit goal...
You get out.
Yeah, right. The explicit goal is to piece together the clues and solve the puzzle and get out. But realistically, most people don't approach the news that way. Most people don't open up TikTok and think, all right, let me figure out what's true and what's false and how can I piece together all this information to get the most accurate picture of what's going on. No, they open TikTok, you know, partly for entertainment. And in the process, they're like, whoa, look at this crazy hurricane clip. Or like, oh my God, Kamala Harris said that. But it's incidental to the experience. And they're not in debunking mode mostly.
I think me, as someone who's like safe in my home here in Brooklyn right now, I sort of look at misinformation and disinformation around the storm in a pretty cold and clinical way, right? It's like a global problem. I wonder if there's actually consequences, though, for people on the ground that you think about.
Yeah, that's always the question, right? Like, of course, there's misinformation online. People are always going to have bad opinions. Does it really matter, right? Like, what's the real world impact? But I think with Helene, it's actually been pretty clear and pretty striking. And with Milton now, the impact of these narratives that say FEMA has run out of money or that the government isn't helping, Biden doesn't care, your Democratic governor doesn't care, that has a serious impact because the people who believe that are now going to think, well, gosh, I can't turn to them for help, right? Like FEMA, if I try to turn to FEMA for help, one of the pieces of misinformation was that FEMA was confiscating people's property. There was a viral one that went around that the government was actually bulldozing the town of Chimney Rock, North Carolina. The idea is you can't trust these people who are trying to help you. They're actually there to hurt you. And that can have life or death consequences because now you get to Milton and you're asking people to trust the authorities who are telling them to evacuate. They're like, well, if I evacuate, what if they take my land, right? One of the pieces of misinformation was that if you accept a loan from whoever it is, the FEMA or the SBA, and you can't immediately repay it, they'll use that as an excuse to seize your property. Well, now people who believe that are going to be hesitant to accept loans that they may or money, you know, grants, the $750 that they may desperately need. And so we've talked to some of the first responders and the officials who are coordinating the efforts. They're now facing a degree of suspicion that makes their jobs harder and hurts the very people that they're trying to help.
Will Aramis, I'm super grateful for your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Mary.
Will Aramis writes about the internet over at the Washington Post. And that's our show. Just a reminder that until November, we are teaming up with Slate Politics to bring you an all-new thing in this feed every Friday. It's called The Surge. It is a Friday roundup of what's going on in politics, but it's me and Jim Newell, who is the grand poobah of Slate Politics. So that means it's super fun. You're going to want to listen. The thing is, if you want to hear The Surge, and I know you do, you got to join Slate Plus. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts by clicking Try Free at the top of the What Next page. Or you can visit slate.com/whatnextplus to get access wherever you listen. You'll get bonus content and plus, no ads on any podcast, including this one. The Surge is available to you to listen to every Friday after lunch. So come grab lunch with us. I'll see you there. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Anna Phillips, and Madeline Ducharme. We are led by Alicia Montgomery. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll get you back here next time.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast Untrimmed Twin Pack $4.99 per pound, which pairs well with Rodney Strong Cabernet Sauvignon. 750 milliliter, $17.99 each, or buy six or more mix and match for $16.19 each. Progresso Soup 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties $1.99 each when you buy four and earn four times points. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.